there's a lesson that I've learned, or actually a lesson that I'm learning, or have learned, but continue to learn and relearn, one that I suspect that I'll have to continue to relearn into the future. And when I tell you about it, it's going to seem kind of silly. If you just take it on its own, it's going to seem so simple that it almost doesn't make any sense. But I actually think that this principle, that this lesson is something that we need to learn, because it is one of the most monumental leaps of faith that we can really make, especially if you think of it in the context of some of the most difficult times in your life, some of the most challenging moments, the times where you are most scared, most anxious, most hopeless, where you're filled with complete despair, a time where maybe your life has changed in such a way that you wish this part of your life was never part of your story, that you never would have had to face this or go through it, maybe something that is just so devastating that you don't even know how you can go forward or how you're going to come from where you are to some good place in the future. And the lesson is simply this: to trust that it's going to be okay. To trust that you're going to be okay, that I'm going to be okay. And when I say this, again, I don't want you to think of this as just some silly statement or, hey, brush off the things that are difficult in your life. Don't worry, it's going to be okay. I don't want you to take it as glib or cliche. I want you to take it as just really think about some of those tough times in your life, because we've all been through them, and think about what it would be like if you could live in such a way where you really trusted that it's going to be okay and that I'm going to be okay. See, I don't know everybody who's watching or listening to this, but I know a whole bunch of you, and I know some of your stories and some of the things that you've been through, maybe quite a long time ago in the past. Some of you, this year has been such a challenging year, of course, for so many of us, things that you might be going through now, and many of you, maybe not all of you, but many of you, you know me, and you know some of my story and some of the things that I've been through in life, and I just say that to say that we all go through those times in life, times that are super confusing, times where the future is uncertain, times where we're struggling with our circumstances, or our mental health, or a financial breakdown, or real complicated relationship issues that we're not sure how to deal with. And so if you put it in that perspective and just think, what it would be like to live in such a way that whatever you walked in and whatever you walked through, you had a real deep confidence that it's going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. And I wish sometimes that my future self could go back to my past self and in a really intimate and profound way, just deliver that message. Say, hey, I'm from the future and I know what you're going through because I'm you, but from the future. Stay with me here. And I know this hurts. I know it's painful. I know you don't see how this is going to turn out. I know that there's so much uncertainty. I know it's really difficult, and I don't want to take anything away. But to be able to look your past self in the eye in that moment of hurt and pain and struggle and say, but I know this. It's going to be okay, and you're going to be okay. And I see what this is going to look like in another year or 5 years or 10 years. So to come back with that kind of credibility and be able to say, it's going to be okay, and you're going to be okay. But of course, that's not how we learn that lesson. That's not how we get to that kind of trust in confidence, the kind of trust in confidence that says, no matter what I'm going through, I know that God is in control when I'm not in control. And I know that God has made provision for anything that I could possibly go through. Even death, God has made a provision for, and I can trust him and trust that it's going to be okay and I'm going to be okay. We don't learn that lesson. We can't go back to the past or have our future self come to us and teach us that and say, hey, from the perspective that I have, knowing what it looks like on the other side, I can tell you this. We have to learn this lesson by going through these things. We have to learn these lessons, not when times are really good and happy and everything seems to be going our way. We learn that lesson precisely when things are hard and painful and tough, confusing and uncertain. So today I want to talk about an extraordinary character in the Christmas story and such a powerful moment, one that becomes archetypal, I think, for anyone who would be considering to choose to follow Jesus, or those of us who have chosen to follow Jesus. We see just a powerful way that this kind of peace comes. And so I want to talk about Mary, the mother of Jesus. Listen to this from Luke chapter 1, part of the Christmas story, verse 26. It says, in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. And the virgin's name was Mary. Introduction of Mary and a little bit of Joseph here. So we get a little bit of detail that's going to set up some of the tension of the story. And I want you to really feel the tension that Mary walks into the Christmas story, because it's not sort of the nice romantic Christmas story that, for Mary, that a lot of us kind of read it as. So she is betrothed to Joseph. Now, in our culture, most of us, when we're working towards marriage, we start dating somebody, we get to know them, it gets a little bit more serious, we work towards a time where somebody proposes, we get engaged. Once we're engaged, we have this commitment, we're not yet married, but we're working on it, we're promising that we're going to do that, and then we officially get married, and you build your life on from there. Betrothal was a different thing. When two people were betrothed in this culture, they were already officially married, but the marriage was not complete yet. So betrothal was more than an engagement. It was, we've already entered into the permanent commitment of marriage. But the betrothal period was the time after they had made that commitment, but before they had moved in together and started their life together. So a woman in this culture would live in her father's house under her father's protection and provision. And then there was the betrothal. And at the end of the betrothal period, so they get officially married when they're betrothed, but the couple does not live together and does not have sexual relations until the end of the betrothal period, when the husband comes, takes his wife from her father's house and brings her into his house. And so you have this period where they have the full commitment, but they don't live together and they don't have sexual relations. And those rules were not seen to be flexible in this culture. That was the social arrangement of how marriage worked, and it was a really important period that you didn't mess with. So verse 28 then says, "And he came to her and said," the angel, "Greetings, O favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was greatly troubled at the saying and tried to discern what sort of greeting this might be. When we think of an angel coming to someone, again, we're not thinking of sort of the romanticized version that we have of this nice, cute, or handsome man who's got nice wings kind of fluttering into somebody's life all nice and peaceful. These are threatening and imposing, intimidating celestial beings. And so normally in the scriptures, whenever you read of somebody seeing an angel, they're usually afraid of them. Makes sense. Mary is here. And the angel said to her, she's trying to figure out, what's this greeting all about? Why are you coming to see me? What are you about to say to me? I am worried about how this is going to go. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son. And you shall call his name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give to him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." And Mary said to the angel, "How will this be, since I am a virgin?" Angel comes, you're going to conceive, you're going to have a child, and then he makes some of the most incredible promises, statements about this kid that you could ever expect. I mean, just going so big. And this kid's going to be a king, and he's going to reign forever, you know, right from the Most High. He's from God. Like, this is, I don't even know how you would process what you were being told of this child. And then she makes this really great question after he said all of this. "That's really great, angel man. A king that is going to be conceived in me. He's going to be so great. I can't even imagine it. How will this be, since I am a virgin?" Because being a virgin sort of complicates conceiving and have a child. It's kind of a big deal in there. And there are a lot of consequences that are going to come from this statement. So we need to read into, again, the tension of the story and what's going on, because Mary's asking a really, really good question. So if we can get past the biological issues with this first, and come to some of the social consequences and religious consequences, think of what Mary is asking. So you're saying, I'm going to have a child, but I am a virgin. What she's saying is, no matter how this plays out, it's not going to be good for me. I know, Angel Man, you're saying that this baby is going to grow up, be a king, and that sounds really, really great. But in the meantime, I'm going to have some serious problems. Remember, this is a culture 2,000 years ago, much more patriarchal, in which a woman who is unwed and is pregnant is going to have some serious, serious problems. So there's going to be two ways that people could make assumptions about what has happened for Mary, because she's going to get pregnant. She's not going to be able to hide that. She's in a small town where there's a lot of relatives. Everybody's going to know what's going to happen. They're going to assume one of two things. One is that her and Joseph's the father, and her and Joseph have broken the law, broken the religious covenant, the religious constructs of how they're supposed to live. This is a social contract, and you guys were not supposed to have sexual relations, and you did. You are an unwed mother, and that would be a shadow that would follow her around for the rest of her life, which would also make it very difficult for what the angel has said about this kid to happen. I mean, here's a kid who was conceived out of wedlock in a society where that would be a really big problem and have a lot of social and religious consequences. And he's going to become the king? I don't know. That's not the kind of king most people are going to look for in this kind of circumstance. So maybe Mary and Joseph broke the law together. Or Mary was unfaithful to Joseph. This is what, when Joseph finds about this, what Joseph is going to think. And the law has a provision for that. A just man, a man who is going to do what's honorable, if he's in this situation, divorces his wife. You're not supposed to go through the marriage. Remember, they're already officially married, but they're not completely married yet. And so he would have to divorce her. And that's actually what the law says you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to continue to go through this marriage with an adulterous woman. We find out in another place, Joseph was going to do that, and he was going to try and do it quietly. He was going to try and do it in the right way and avoid as much of the shame as possible. But in an honor-shame culture, that's something, again, that's going to follow both of them around for their whole lives. For a woman who would have been divorced at that time and had a child, this is an incredible loss. Remember, a woman goes from being part of her father's family to being part of her husband's family, and she is protected and provided for by those men in this very patriarchal society a couple thousand years ago. And so she would be losing an incredible amount of her security, of what she needed just to live and to be provided for. She'd be losing that. And so either people are going to assume that Mary and Joseph were unfaithful to the law, or that Mary was unfaithful to Joseph. It's one of those situations where no matter what, it's going to be tough. No matter what, this is probably not what Mary wanted for her life. This is not what she would have written for her story. This is not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. It's going to be painful. It's going to be filled with a whole bunch of loss. It's going to be a loss of credibility, because who's going to believe this story? It's going to be loss of reputation. That goes along with what I just said, all the consequences that come with being an unwed mother in this society. It's going to be a loss of security. Again, who's going to take care of Mary? She's taking a huge risk here. And it's going to be ultimately a loss of control. And losing control is something that terrifies most of us. The thought that I'm not in control of my life, it's so threatening. And for us, whether we're struggling with our mental health or losing a loved one, the dissolution of a marriage, financial hardship, or whatever it is that makes us realize that we're not in control anymore, those things terrify us. Our future seems dim. Our present feels untenable. We might think, I never wanted this to be part of my story. I don't want to go through this. I don't know how I'm going to come back from it. And it is a great act of faith, therefore, to really deeply believe in the middle of those storms that it's going to be okay. that even when it's not the life that I thought I was going to live, and I don't know how to live this kind of life, to really know it's going to be okay, and I'm going to be okay. God has made provision for this. God has a better story. And to believe that God being in control is better than me being in control is a monumental act of faith, powerful act of faith. And I believe one of the key aspects of living a peaceful life. So if we keep reading in verse 35, the angel answered her after this question, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child being born will be called holy, the Son of God. And behold, your relative Elizabeth in her old age has conceived a son. And this is the sixth month with her who was called barren. For nothing will be impossible with God." So now the angel coming, he's kind of trying to reassure her with another example. You know, Elizabeth and everybody thought she's never going to have a child and she's barren, but she's conceived a son. And if she could conceive a son, you can do this. Nothing is impossible with God. God can do incredible things when it looks so bleak, when it looks like you have no idea how to go forward. Can you trust this, Mary? And then such a powerful verse. And Mary said, "Behold, I am the servant of the Lord. Let it be to me according to your word." And the angel departed from her. Let it be to me. She accepts the invitation. In other words, I will surrender to God. And this powerfully reveals a really deep and profound principle of faith. And it's this: we don't find peace by being in control. We find peace by being surrendered. Peace does not come from, I can control everything in my life, and I have everything in control, and I've ordered everything the way that it ought to be. That's how we think. That's our intuition. If I can just control these people, if I can just control my finances, if I can control my work, if I can control my marriage, if I can control my circumstances, then I'll finally be at peace. That doesn't work. Being at peace does not come from being in control. It comes from being surrendered. In fact, if 20 and 20 has taught us anything, it has taught us exactly that, that control is elusive. In fact, we don't have nearly as much control as we think that we have. And that's the problem with it. That's why our peace can't hinge on us being in control, because it's so easy for us to find ourselves out of control. There's this quote from Jim Collins, I'll warn you, it's a little bit depressing, but I think it's important for us to think through. And he is commenting on another quote that says, "History is the study of surprises." A famous historian wrote that. And Jim Collins commented on that by saying this: "This line captures the world in which we live. We are living history, surprise after surprise after surprise. And just when we think we've had all the big surprises for a while, along comes another one. In the first two decades of the 20th century have taught us anything, it's that uncertainty is chronic, instability is permanent, disruption is common, and we can neither predict nor govern events. There will be no new normal. There will only be a continuous series of not normal episodes, defying predictions and unforeseen by most of us until they happen." Whew. I mean, that seems a little bit pessimistic, but at the same time, after the year that we've gone through, you got to look at that and say, that's true. We can be in control to a certain extent. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be working hard and be disciplined to control certain things in our lives that we can control. But we need to disconnect from the obsession we have with control and the obsession we have with getting results and having a perfect life and making everything exactly how it ought to be, because that is an illusion. We don't have that much control. And what we need to realize is that life is always going to throw surprises at us, and there's going to be curveballs and things that we didn't expect and hard moments that come in. And we just need to realize, and this can be really difficult, but to accept that ultimately we don't have that much control. We just don't. And that's why, like I said a minute ago, our peace cannot hinge on our ability to be in control. Because control, to a certain extent at that level, is an illusion. We just don't have it. So we need to detach from our obsession with that kind of level of control and results. Look at Mary. She accepts the invitation for Jesus to take up residence within her and then births him into the world. Let it be to me. Hey, Mary, we're going to throw your life into complete chaos. And there's going to be parts of this that you never would have wanted. It's going to be challenging, painful, hard. Nobody's going to understand. You don't have any certainty. This is probably the hardest thing you've ever had to try and believe and trust in your entire life. You're throwing out the things that most people are trying to build into their lives, like a good reputation and strong security and the right kind of family and all the rest of it. And you're going to lose a whole bunch of that. And Mary becomes the archetype of what it is to be a disciple. She accepts the invitation for Jesus to take up residence within her, and then she births him into the world. That's how God comes into our lives, by invitation, not forced upon us. You know, Mary is given this, presented with this opportunity, a scary one, and it's incredible as she thinks through it, and as she asks the question, for her to come to that point to say, let it be to me according to your word. I'm in. I'm surrendered. I'll trust that it's going to be okay, and I'm going to be okay. I'm going to trust that the way God is writing this story is better than the way I would write this story. That's powerful for us to think about. Could we accept that same kind of invitation for God to take up residence in us and for us to be able to carry the presence of God, and then therefore be able to birth that presence into the world around us? And we do that by accepting the invitation, by really, really trusting, by saying, let it be to me. God, I don't need to be in control. My peace will not come from being in control. My peace will come from being surrendered. And it's a better thing that God is in control than I'm in control. I can actually trust that in those moments. You know, Mary, I think, so amazing in this story. But if you read through the Gospels and into the book of Acts, Mary never really does anything super heroic. She doesn't have these huge moments where you're like, wow, look at her go out and do this or that. She's often just kind of quietly in the background, especially after this moment, after this let it be moment. But there's a couple of other really powerful moments where Mary does show up. Later, we see Mary, read this in John chapter 19, verse 25, standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas and Mary of Magdala. Do you imagine that moment? Mary watching her son be crucified. There she is at the foot of the cross. By the way, when most of the disciples, especially the male disciples, have run off, they're scared. They're scared of what this means for them and how it could blow back on them, and they could be implicated with Jesus, and who knows what would happen to them. They're confused, they're struggling, and they run away. Here's Mary, and if you're a parent, I don't know how you could ever imagine what it would be like at the foot of the cross watching your son be crucified. But there she is, not running away, but standing there in that moment, once again having a let it be moment. I never would have written this. This is the most confusing, uncertain, painful moment of despair. But there she is. Let it be. Pope John Paul II had a quote to this verse. He said, "The yes spoken on the day of Annunciation reaches full maturity on the day of the cross." The let it be to me when this was announced to her came to full maturity when she's standing there at the cross, once again surrendered. This never would have been my plan, but let it be. Do you know where we see Mary next? We read about her in the book of Acts in chapter 1 when Jesus has been resurrected and people start seeing him and he ascends to heaven, and Jesus is now vindicated, and everything that he taught and stood for and was crucified over was vindicated. And in that moment, we see Mary joining with the other disciples in prayer, and her let it be moment is vindicated. Let it be to me. It's going to be okay. I don't see how it's going to happen from the date of the announcement to the crucifixion. Let it be to me. I don't know how this could possibly get better. This is the moment of utter defeat. And then standing there, having seen the risen Christ ascend to the Father and saying, let it be. Let it be. God is writing the most powerful. powerful story of redemption that you could ever imagine. And the way that you get to be part of it is not by being in control, but by being surrendered. And that's how you live at peace. God is writing a powerful story in us and through us throughout history. Can we join with Mary and say, let it be? And when it gets hard and when we don't see the way forward and when we're stuck in complete hopelessness and when we're weary and tired and sick of the way life is right now, to be able to surrender and find peace in let it be. Let it be. There's a famous Beatles song called Let It Be, written by Paul McCartney. And Paul McCartney wrote this song after he had a dream. In the dream, he was with his mother who had died. And so it was this powerful dream where he felt really connected to her. And it felt like he had spent time with her in that kind of dream kind of way. And after he woke up, it inspired him to think for one reason or another of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And so he wrote these words, which again is a Beatles song, but actually really, really good theology in it. Listen to the words. When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And when the brokenhearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see, there will be an answer, let it be. And when the night is cloudy, there is still a light that shines on me, shining until tomorrow. Let it be. I wake up to the sound of music. Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be. And for all of us who seek the peace that comes from being in control, we need to realize that real peace will actually come from being surrendered. And perhaps we need to hear, in our times of struggle and weariness and pain, those deep words of wisdom that say, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And to hear the character of Mary speaking and whispering to us, let it be. Let it be. Heavenly Father, I want to pray today for all who are feeling a real lack of peace. So many of us who are struggling with that, perhaps struggling with our circumstances, our mental health, very real issues in our lives that are causing us a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, a lot of pain. God, would you help us to hear this powerful story of Mary and with her to be able to say, we are surrendered to you and to your story. Let it be to us as you would have it be. And that in that we would find your peace, the peace that comes from knowing that you're in control, and that's so much better news than us trying to be in control. God, speak powerfully into the hearts of those who are struggling today, who are listening and watching to this. May they know that they can trust you in any and every circumstance so deeply. God, thank you that you are trustworthy. Thank you that at Christmas, we celebrate that you stepped into our world, into our struggles to bring this world peace. We say thank you and we love you. In Jesus' name, amen.